Now, when I was asked to come here and give an update on the ethanol industry in January, we were on the heels of our single greatest legislative success. And I thought, this would be great. This would be a victory lap. I'll be able to talk to, about what a tremendous achievement the Energy Policy Act of 2007 was. I thought that this would be just the easiest thing in the world to do. Talk about that historic legislation, the very first time, or the first time in 20 years at least, that Congress had gotten significant conservation gains with improvements to CAFE and married those up with a brand new renewable fuel standard that built off the success of the 2005 bill. The very first time that Congress had required refiners to utilize and blend our product. Because we had been so successful in 2005 and because we had built so quickly, Congress recognized that, hey, we can do more than 7.5 billion gallons of ethanol, and we should. We need to be tapping the potential of American farmers to produce a renewable fuel and maximize the potential of domestic renewable resources. So we need to do more. And Congress passed a 36 billion gallon renewable fuel standard that did a number of things. It moved ethanol beyond just grain because of that 36 billion gallons. The law requires that 21 billion gallons be derived from cellulosic materials. So it moved the industry forward. It also, just by requiring such a large volume of fuel into gasoline supplies, it moved our industry beyond just being a 10% blend. We sell 140, 150 billion gallons of gasoline in this country. So at 10%, that's 14 or 15 billion gallons. But Congress said, no, that's not enough. We want ethanol to be more than just a blend component in gasoline. We want to make sure that it is capable of being a true replacement fuel so that ethanol is used more widely around the country in E85 and potentially higher-level blends, and looking at how we can do that. This was historic legislation. There's only one drawback. The oil companies didn't think we were going to get that done, and they were a little bit surprised that Congress had moved so quickly to build upon the success of the 2005 bill. And our opponents saw what we see today. Our opponents saw an industry that was evolving, that is looking at new technologies and new feedstocks, and they saw the potential of as much of a third of their market share being lost to domestic renewables, and by golly, they weren't ready for that. So what they've done is they have created this enormous campaign, and they've hired high-priced PR firms, and they've got talking points out there, and they're buying themselves some studies, and they're in the editorial boardrooms of every newspaper across the country talking about the evils of ethanol, and they're getting a little bit of traction. This fight really is not about the 9 billion gallons of ethanol that will be sold this year. This fight really isn't even about 15 billion gallons of ethanol that might one day be produced from grain-based ethanol. That's okay with them, quite frankly. They need our product today. They need our product for its octane components and its clean-burning characteristics, and frankly, just to augment domestic gasoline supplies. They need it as a blend component. They're scared to death of ethanol as E85. They're scared to death that ethanol might be a true replacement fuel. They're scared about higher-level blends. They're scared about losing a third of their market share. And they've teamed up with another constituency that has grown accustomed to cheap corn, that's motivated by greed, that doesn't see how ethanol today has revitalized rural communities. It doesn't want to see how ethanol can have such a dramatic effect on our nation's economy, our energy, and our environment. And big food and big oil today is creating a heck of a smokescreen. But it's not about ethanol as a blend component. It is about the future. It's about cellulosic ethanol. It's about the next generation of ethanol production. It's about ethanol as a true replacement. They need to stop us now, but they won't. I assure you they won't. They can blame ethanol for all the evils that they want, from food riots to deforestation, but the facts are on our side. They have tried to suggest that ethanol is responsible for the increased cost of tortillas, even though ethanol is produced from yellow feed corn and not white corn used in tortillas, and even though our own trade laws don't allow us to export any more white corn to Mexico. They blamed us for the increased price of beer, only they seem to have forgotten that there's only about 9 cents worth of barley in a six-pack of beer. We've been blamed for everything under the sun, and they want to ignore the fact that the real causes of food price inflation today are increased demand as China and India population grows. Changing dietary habits as a growing world economy means that people are eating two meals a day instead of just one, and they want to have a pork chop with their rice. They ignore the fact that there have indeed been weather-related events in Australia and Europe that have devastated our world's wheat supply over the past 2 years. They ignore the fact that speculation in the marketplace is driving commodity prices, most specifically food commodity prices, beyond anything anybody would expect to see from supply and demand. You know that hedge funds and investment funds actually control more grain today than does the entire ethanol industry on an annual basis, and you want to tell me that that's not having an impact on price? But they want to ignore all that. And they want to ignore the single most important factor of all, the price of oil. You can't produce 250 corn on 450 diesel. It is the price of oil that is impacting everything today. It is devastating our nation's economy. That is why people are hemorrhaging their investments in the stock market and putting it into places where they think it's going to be safer in commodity markets. It's having an impact there. It's certainly having an impact on how much it costs to raise a crop, to process that into food, to transport that to market. You know that each food product will travel 1,300 miles? Do you know that 65% of food aid today internationally is about transportation? The average benefit to the farm from food costs is 19 cents on every dollar spent. 19 cents. Somehow that 19 cents is responsible for all of this. And they want to ignore the marketing bill that is so driven by the price of energy. That's wrong. They will not win. They can obfuscate. They can create smoke screens. They can outright lie, and they have. But the facts are on our side, and we will prevail. Over the past several months, I have participated in half a dozen congressional hearings. And every single one of them starts out as a hearing to bash ethanol, to determine just how much our biofuels policy is driving food price inflation and how bad this is. And you explain it to them and you remind them of what it costs in terms of energy to get food to the market, how much it's costing farmers today to produce that crop, how much oil is devastating our economy. And a hearing that began as a bash ethanol hearing quickly turns into, what can we do to get our arms around our dangerous dependence on imported oil? What can we do to help create an energy policy that keeps this from happening? It turns right back to our message. We need to continue to do more of that. We need to continue to remind people that the 19 cents that a farmer gets isn't what's driving this market. It's about oil. You know, USDA has looked at this intensely, and they're continuing to do so. And their analysis suggests that ethanol is indeed having an impact on commodity prices, an impact, by the way, that Congress intended us to have. They intended ethanol to increase farm income. They intended ethanol to have a beneficial impact on commodity prices, because corn prices, when we began our surge, were $1.82 a bushel, and that's unsustainable. One of the reasons they promoted this value-added market was to make sure that farmers were getting more of their income from the marketplace, from the federal government. And indeed, that's exactly what's happened. Last year, farm program costs were reduced more than $6 billion, according to USDA, because of the increased value-added benefit of ethanol production. We're having that benefit today. USDA recognizes that we are part of what is impacting commodity prices. But the impact on food prices, USDA says, is just 3%. 3%. But somehow we're getting 97% of the media coverage on this issue. And while there might be a passing mention of things like rising demand and drought and speculation in the marketplace, rarely a comment about the oil price, we're getting the lion's share of the blame. It's not right. It won't last. The facts will catch up to the hyperbole on this. The manufactured hysteria of big oil and big food, we will prevail. It's going to take some time. We're all going to have to continue to work. We all have a responsibility to make sure that the media gets the right message. And if there's two things I'm going to ask you. One would be to take pen to paper and write your own op-ed to your local paper and let them know what ethanol means to you, to your company, to your community, and begin to fight back. The other thing that you need to do, and I'll tell you how to do it in a minute, the governor of Texas this year responded to a constituent that was concerned about his rising feed costs and decided he would submit to the Environmental Protection Agency a waiver request asking that the federal government waive 50% of the renewable fuel standard. So the standard this year is 9 billion gallons. He wants 4.5 billion gallons of ethanol to go away. Now, before he submitted his waiver request, he asked his own alma mater, Texas A&M University, to evaluate what this would mean for the Texas economy. And Texas A&M took its charge. They looked at the facts, and they came back to him, and they reported that, well, it really wouldn't have that much of an impact on grain prices, but you could be certain the gas prices would go up. Texas Governor Rick Perry said, that's off message. So he ignored his own state university, his own analysis, and instead of having any real data, he supplied a 2-page letter to EPA saying, please, please, please waive this program so that my constituent won't have to pay as much for his grain. No data, no legal analysis, no nothing. Nonetheless, it's gotten a great deal of attention, and EPA has to look at it. They've got to evaluate it. The comment period on that waiver request ends next Monday, and I would ask each one of you to file a comment as well on the RFA webpage, www.ethanolrfa.org. There is a button that you can push. It'll get you to a letter. You can edit the letter to reflect your own opinion and your own company's impact or your own personal view, and you can send it immediately to EPA, and I would ask you please to do that. We looked at what the impact would be. If you were to take 4.5 billion gallons of ethanol off the marketplace, as Governor Perry would like, gasoline prices would increase 30% in the near term. 30%. So you think paying $4.05 for gasoline is bad today? Where do you have to pay 5.25? That would be the impact. That's severe economic harm. That's what we need to make sure that EPA is looking at, that they're not just looking at one side of the ledger, the minimal impact that it would have on cattle feed prices, that they're looking at the broader picture, the overall consumer impact that if you were to take gasoline off the marketplace or ethanol off the gasoline marketplace and what it would mean for our consumer costs. It would be significant. But that's just our analysis. Look at others. In the last couple of days, Merrill Lynch out of London, something that we had absolutely nothing to do with, took a look at what would happen if the world biofuels industry was not supplying as much fuel that it is today. And they said the crude oil prices would increase more than 20%. So a barrel of crude oil, instead of being $1.30, would be over $130 would be over $150 a barrel. Think about that. Think about the impact on our economy that would have. DOE recently did an analysis that concludes that ethanol today is helping to keep prices 25 to 35 cents below what it would be were ethanol not part of the marketplace. Now, it's hard to convince a consumer that's already paying more than $4 for his gasoline that it could be far worse, but the fact of the matter is, you take 7% of U.S. motor fuel supply off the marketplace, and we would indeed be paying significantly more for our gasoline, and that would be severe economic harm, and that's something we cannot allow. If you want to increase food prices in this country, take ethanol out of the marketplace. Then you'll really see what high prices of food will be. We need to stop this, and we need to stop it now. Now, in addition to all the food versus fuel smokescreen, they've also suggested that ethanol is not what it portends to be in terms of climate change and its environmental benefit. And they point to a study that was released this past year from Tim Surchinger. It got published in a magazine called Science Today or Science Express. Now, Tim Surchinger is a lawyer, and with meaning no disrespect to lawyers that might be in the room, I'm sorry, he's a lawyer, not a scientist. He wrote a polemic designed to demonstrate that you could produce biofuels in an unsustainable way. No kidding. And he said that for every bushel of corn used in the production of ethanol that took up ground here in the United States meant that acres someplace else in the world, and he just assumed it would all be out of the Brazilian rainforest, would have to come into production. And you do that, and that's probably not a good idea. No kidding. But that's not the way U.S. ethanol production would be allowed to move forward. It's not sustainable, and it's not reality. The fact of the matter is, our industry today is realizing significant reductions in greenhouse gases as our industry evolves and becomes more efficient. We are using less and different energy sources. We are reducing our use of water. We are reducing our electricity. We are becoming more and more efficient with each and every plant that Ron Fagan builds and Jeff Breuen builds and ICM builds. Every single groundbreaking I go to or plant opening I go to, I'm looking at the single most efficient ethanol plant in the world. Because as we grow, as we evolve, it just makes sense to use the most efficient and effective technologies. That's ignored in Tim Surchinger's analysis. He looks at all these indirect effects. What would happen if? And there are assumptions after assumptions that after assumptions that EPA and other independent analysis that's been done on that suggest make no sense whatsoever. You'd never know that from reading the press articles, though. We need, collectively, to do a better job of getting the facts out there. Our ethanol reduces greenhouse gases 21% as an industry today. That's what DOE and the GREET model suggests. With each new facility that's coming online, however, our greenhouse gas benefit improves, our carbon footprint diminishes, and we become a greener industry. There are going to be indirect effects that we need to look at, but there are going to be positive indirect effects that need to be evaluated as well, because without ethanol, where are we going to be getting our energy supplies? Certainly, we will be getting far more from Canada and the tar sands. Think of the carbon footprint of that. Think of the water usage involved in trying to get petroleum from tar sands and the energy it takes. Every new barrel of oil, every new gallon of gasoline that you get incrementally from the petroleum industry, the carbon footprint is worse. Every new ethanol plant that we open up, the carbon footprint is better. We're getting better. They're getting worse. We need to make sure that people completely understand that. The industry today is strong. The industry today continues to grow. We have 160 plants in operation today. There are 55 that are under construction. Yeah, this is going to be a difficult summer, but we're going to get through it. We are going to come out of this a stronger industry. This is an industry that survived oil price collapse in 1983. We got through all the no alcohol signs in the mid-80s where oil companies wanted to demonstrate that somehow their petroleum-based product was better than our carbohydrate-based product. We got through the Ways and Means Committee chairman at one point trying to eliminate the ethanol tax incentive. Not just did we defeat him, we got an extension at that time. We've gotten through the 93 floods. We got through the 96 drought. We've gotten through a tax on our industry for its ozone impact, its water impact, its odor, and we've come out every time a stronger industry, and we will get through this as well. The facts are on our side. They might have high-priced PR firms and talking points and botched studies. We have the facts, and we have the grassroots. We have each and every one of you. The reason I enjoy coming to this event each and every year is because you're the industry. You're the people that are running the plants, that are producing fuel day in and day out, that are building something, that are creating jobs and economic opportunity across rural America. There's a lot of hot air in Washington, D.C. I know because I'm probably part of it. They never created a thing. You're producing. You are the strength of this industry. You are the reason we will get through it. But we absolutely have to come together. We have to use our strength. We have to write op-eds. We have to comment to EPA. We have to let our members of Congress know that this is not right, that vilifying America's farmers and America's only domestic renewable fuel doesn't make sense, that we need an energy policy that depends upon ethanol and biodiesel and cellulosic ethanol and other advanced biofuels more today than ever before. My goodness, at $130 a barrel oil today, if people can't see how desperately we need more biofuels, they're never going to get it. But don't be deluded. Our opponents are highly financed and highly motivated, and they are seeking this opportunity to try to put the stake in this industry. They will not win if we stand together. I assure you that I, the Renewable Fuels Association, the U.S. ethanol industry, BBI, and each and every one of you are going to be standing at the end of this, a stronger industry, more resolute than we've ever been, that we are going to supply this nation a clean-burning, renewable, domestic fuel now and well into the future. Thank you.